Hello, I'm Will Shires and this is Talking Drugs. This episode was recorded live in the Knowledge Zone at Road Transport Expo, hence the background noise. My guests are Martin Tomlinson from Volvo Truck and Bus UK and Phil Rootham from Scania UK, and we're discussing the future of diesel engines.
Hello everyone, welcome to this session, which is also going to be a Talking Trucks podcast. Now, you only have to look around at the stands at Road Transport Expo to realise that the UK has well and truly started its journey to net zero. But where does that leave the diesel engine? Now, today I'm joined by two representatives from truck manufacturers to discuss just that. On my left is Martin Tomlinson, who's the head of media and truck demonstration.
That's right,
isn't it? This is correct.
And Phil Rootham here is the Scania technical manager. So welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Now, on the cover of last week's Commercial Motor, we've got a Scania and a Volvo together, which is virtually unheard of for us. Now, the reason for that is we've just taken them on a European road trip. We took them on the journey back to Sweden. But the most interesting thing about it was those vehicles' drivelines. Because what we had there was arguably the two most fuel-efficient trucks either company has ever built. So tell us a bit about them first. Let's start with you, Martin. What was the Volvo?
Well, it was a 500 iSave with a turbo compound engine. So as you know, over the last couple of years, we've broken this Commercial Motor fuel record twice in the last 3 years with that engine. Admittedly with a 460, so this year we've got a 500 to try and see how that goes on as well. But we've been very, very successful with it. It's phenomenal on fuel. Everybody who's bought them talks about the performance, the fuel consumption, driver comfort. So it's very much our sort of class-leading truck, really.
And remind me, what was the figure it achieved?
9.49 MPG around the CM route.
Which around that route is quite
phenomenal,
quite incredible, really.
It is.
Okay, and now the Scania Super. Come on, talk us about the driveline.
Yeah, it's a part of a massive change for us. The Super engine was released last year, or the Super range of engines was released last year from 420 through 460, 500 and 560. The vehicle I think you took was a 560, wasn't it? That you took over to Sweden. It's a huge step change for us. It's the first engine that we've produced that breaks that 50% thermal efficiency barrier, which is a massive step and some really significant changes to the way the engine functions, which sees us having fuel returns that are incrementally far better than where we were before. But as part of Super, it wasn't just about a engine launch, it was about a powertrain launch. So we see a complete change in the gearbox as well, much wider spreads, a lot more efficiency through the gearbox and a lot more targeted lubrication to try and reduce drag to contribute a little bit more to fuel savings. And overall, we're seeing improvements of 8-9% out of that on its predecessor. So a huge step change for us in terms of the engine technology and what it brings to the market.
And hopefully we'll be getting one soon to put around the Commercial Motor road test route. So yeah, nice little competition there.
We like a challenge, but nobody's come anywhere near yet. So
now, these trucks represent 100 years of diesel engine development, but the biggest advances have happened in the last 20 or 30 years. 100 Euro 6 trucks produce the same emissions as one Euro 3 truck. And in some cities like London, Euro 6 trucks actually clean up the air. Do you think truck manufacturers get enough credit for this incredible achievement?
No, I don't think we do. The general public certainly look at trucks as being dirty, polluting pieces of machinery that make the air quality worse than what it actually is. But as you say, we've never had a truck that's any cleaner, and I guess we're both in the same boat with that. And trucks are pretty good today on the technology that we've got today. Certainly a lot better than the good old Euro 3 days, but the advances in the last 15 years have been incredible, really, from where we were then to where we are today.
But it's just so hard to get that message out to people, though. I mean, Commercial Motor, we're just preaching at the converted, you know?
Yeah, I think we're in a position where diesel today or HVO or diesel as ICE combustion engines are hugely efficient in what they're doing. There's been some huge steps in terms of the control and how precise those engines are in their operation today. The cities have an agenda around certain things, but I mean, a lot of this development has come as a result of customer demand, of consumer demand in whether they're in legislative values around NOx and hydrocarbons, or whether they're in actually to stay commercially viable. We've had to make the improvements that we've made to drive that fuel consumption agenda to keep Hawley as viable and profitable as we possibly can and really deliver something to the market.
Now, truck makers are having to divert their R&D into alternative fuels. With this in mind, do you think this is it? We've seen the last of engine diesel engine developments. Is there more to come?
Euro 7 is very much on the agenda as we stand today. From a pan-European perspective, the UK adoption is perhaps a little bit of a question mark over that, but we work for global manufacturers, so that sitting on the agenda is going to consume some resource on what we're doing. And as you said before, we've been producing engines for some 100 years. It's a very mature product for us in terms of the development steps we're taking. And I don't think the road to zero necessarily means the death of the combustion engine. Hydrogen combustion, and certainly at the moment biogas, is providing a massive step for us. So with both legislative changes in the future and a rhetoric and a demand from customers and operators to decarbonise in different ways, that doesn't necessarily mean that ICE isn't valid for the coming years.
Yeah, I think we'd sort of got on the same lines. I mean, everybody talks about hydrogen being the silver bullet in a few years' time, which it clearly isn't going to be. And I think everything has its place, whether it be battery electric, hydrogen combustion, hydrogen fuel cell, Euro 6, Stroke 7, using HVO. I mean, when we did the commercial motor test last year, we actually used HVO diesel. So it just proves
that record was actually
that was with HVO. So that just proves that it's just as sustainable as some of the other technology that's emerging at the minute.
Yep. Now, do you think we're going to reach a point where volumes of diesel-powered trucks dwindle to such a level that it's not viable for established truck manufacturers to build their own engines? Would it be a case of going to the likes of Cummins and they're the last man standing?
$1 million question, I guess. I think we've still got a little bit to go. Yeah, obviously, the legislation as it's written today, we've still got 16, 17 years worth of diesel sales ahead of us. Whether that legislation gets brought forward, I can't look into a crystal ball and tell you, but customers obviously still want a product that will deliver what they deliver today in the same way. So I think everything will have a place, certainly for the next sort of 15, 16 years, until that legislation in 2040 becomes reality, I guess.
Yeah,
I think as well there's a decarbonisation roadmap for lots of our customers that need to consider what those steps are. And their businesses aren't necessarily linear in their operation. So decarbonising your fleet or that transition towards net zero isn't a one holistic step approach. There has to be parts of that fleet that are earlier in that roadmap, and there has to be parts of that fleet that are later in that roadmap. And when we consider things like heavy haulage or some of those more arduous operations, you know, in terms of packing energy onto the side of a vehicle, diesel is still the most efficient way of doing that, or HVO, or what the other alternative synthetic fuels are. But packing energy onto the side of fuels and side of vehicles, but also considering that we're a market that's really evolved around a three-axle tractor unit, which provides its own chassis packaging challenges around that. So the decarbonisation agenda can't be seen as a turn the lights off one day on diesel and the lights on something else the next day. It has to be a staged approach for the entire ecosystem to manage all of that change.
So both Scania and Volvo are pushing their electric trucks in a huge way. I mean, you've got a whole stand inside just devoted to electric, and I think half of your trucks on your stand are electric.
And the ride and drive trucks are just electric, tractor and rigid. So.
Now, you have to be pushing them because you get fined huge amounts of money if you don't reach your Vecto scores. Now, I want you two to take off your metaphorical manufacturer caps on this occasion and just tell me personally, what do you think of electric trucks? Do you think UK is doing the right thing here? Do you believe battery-powered trucks are the be-all and end-all? or is there life left in diesel?
I think it depends on, very much depends on the operation. I mean, if you look at, you just mentioned London, but if you look at certainly some of the electric vehicles we've sold already, a lot of those are based in cities. So I think all the technologies that we've got available today have their place. Battery electric vehicles very much work in city centres. Battery usage is incredibly low when you're in stop-start traffic, not so much on a motorway. You sit there at 90 kilometres per hour and sit there and watch the battery disappear. So I think everything has got its place, but it's very much dependent on what the customer's operation is and what he wants to do with it. So yeah, it's interesting times, very challenging though at the moment.
Yeah, I agree. I think the honesty and integrity around what are you doing with your vehicles and dimensioning your choice of powertrain based on how you use your vehicles is like any other component on the truck. You know, we wouldn't use a small city cab for a long haulage operation, and vice versa. So dimensioning the vehicle according to the application is something that we've evolved as manufacturers to be really focused on. And understanding how you utilize that and then plotting that into a route is something that we really need to consider. So as I said before, these are stepping stones towards different things, and the internal combustion engine has to play a part in that for those more complex areas to decarbonize, just based on what it offers today, both in a commercial and a practical environment.
Okay. Now, what about the UK's timetable for banning the sale of combustion engine trucks? It's 2035 for up to 26 tonnes and 2040 for anything above it. Is that achievable?
Yes, I think it is. I think the biggest challenge we probably both face, I'm sure you'll agree with me, is that we've got the technology today, it's outside. The biggest challenge that we've got is the infrastructure, and it just isn't there. So if you, I spend quite a bit of time in Scandinavia, as I'm sure Phil does as well, but if you go to Norway, Norway were on this journey 15 years ago. So you go to every truck stop in Norway and there's a high-powered charger on almost every charging point. The filling stations have got one diesel pump, one petrol pump, and a load of charging points. But we're so, so far behind the curve. We've got 16 years until the 2040 deadline. It's not very long, but say Norway have started this journey 15 years ago and they're there today. Sweden are a little bit behind, but it is getting there. But certainly Norway is sort of like the shining light when it comes to decarbonisation.
But there's a lot less trucks and a lot less people in Norway.
There is, but there's also a lot of trucks go from mainland Europe north. I mean, you go, if you drive across Germany, as I did 2 weeks ago, you look at the truck stops there with sort of 2,000 parking spaces. To put that amount of power into that sort of area is going to be a huge challenge. Whoever looks after it, whether that be the European Union or as manufacturers, it's very much a joined up approach with all the authorities to try and get that infrastructure in place, but it's very, very expensive and it takes a very long time to sort.
Yeah, I've got very little faith. I mean, we haven't even got enough truck parking spaces, so to then electrify those spaces as well,
it's a massive challenge.
It really is.
Well, and unless the government get on board and drive that agenda for change, then us as manufacturers, we can't do it. We can't do it on our own.
Of course. Phil, what do you think? Is it achievable?
I think from a truck manufacturer point of view, the technology is maturing at a pace that we can deliver vehicles that can fulfill those tasks. The infrastructure, not only on where do I park, where do I drive, but also one step beyond that to say, where is my energy coming from? What does my grid look like? Do I have a position where we get to the point as UK One that we are self-sufficient in our energy supply and we are that is coming from a green renewable source? That feels like a longer journey, but from a vehicle manufacturer, absolutely we are on track for that and we're trying to drive that agenda, but we can't do it on our own. We need government to come with us, we need energy companies to come with us. It needs to be a complete ecosystem approach if you're going to hit those targets. Yeah. But from a manufacturer point of view, absolutely we'll have products ready to roll.
Well, I've got serious doubts myself whether we're going to reach those targets.
Do you think that's because of us, or do you think that's because of manufacturers, or do you think that's because of infrastructure?
Infrastructure, absolutely infrastructure.
Yeah.
And it's also interesting to note that there was a lot of talk from the disruptors, the newcomers, but it's you guys, the established manufacturers, who have led the way with electric. Yeah. That has been interesting. But let's get back to diesel, because that's what we're talking about here. Even when diesel is finally phased out, you both lose a USP. You've got your FH16 and you've got your legendary V8. So how do you cope without this? How do you differentiate yourselves from your sister companies? What's the difference between Scania and MAN when you lose your V8 and you and Renault when you lose your FH16? Mm. Who's first?
Sure, I'll put my foot in it first, shall I go? I think I get where you're coming from, and obviously we've both got 16-litre engines of various types. We can argue whether inline or Vs are the right way forward, but we've probably both got our own views on that.
Yeah, it's a V.
And I think it's not as much of a challenge to us as it is to Phil, because obviously a lot of your brand is built around V8. You sell a lot of V8s at lower power, so they're not all 770s, whereas for us, we very rarely sell FH16s. I don't remember seeing a 550. We've got a 650 outside, but most of the time, people buy a 750. Whereas with you guys, you probably sell more at the lower horsepowers than what we do. So yes, it will be a challenge. We've got some diehards, as you guys have as well. So yes, it will be a challenge, and where we go with it, only time will tell, I guess.
Look, the world will change and the world will evolve. The V8, or our V8, crafted its place in the market based on what it delivers and how it performs. And that's what creates brand differentiation. That's what creates the following that the V8 has now created. And our job as manufacturers is to make sure that whatever we bring to market and however we bring it to market, we deliver those same core values as to what the company's about and the core values that apply to an operation. So the V8 didn't come into the market with a great big rubber stamp to say it's a V8 and it immediately gets a following. It crafted a following based on its ability to answer a need within the marketplace. So our job is to make sure that that need is answered in a way that's efficient, comfortable, and engages with drivers and customers, both financially and emotionally.
See, it's Truckfest Malvern, I think, tomorrow. And you go along there, you'll see hundreds and hundreds of people wearing V8 caps, T-shirts, even tattoos. I'd be very surprised if you can have Scania battery tattoos or baseball caps.
You never know. I could take you somewhere. We can get you tattooed up today if you want, Will. But I think it will evolve. We've talked a little bit earlier in this session about the potential of different technologies coming to the fore and how they're used, whether that's internal combustion with an array of different fuels. That doesn't necessarily mean the death of various technologies. It means we need to be smarter and we need to be cuter about how we do it. But again, back to the point before, the V8 created a following based on what it delivered into the market. It didn't come rubber stamped from the get-go, so it's really important we keep those values, that heritage, and that position of delivering something better than expected and better than we feel anybody else can to drive whatever is, whether it's a new V8 or whether it's the continuation of the legacy.
Okay. Questions here from the audience. Can any EV driveline technology be adapted to make diesels even more efficient?
I think there's, we've had hybrid technology on the market for a little while now, and we can utilize, if you look at the consumption of fuel in a vehicle, if you look at it in quite a lot of detail, it's when we put heavy load through an engine. So the start off and stop and that demand for everything that it's got is when we see the higher fuel consumption. So blending that with a degree of electrification allows you to kind of peak shave in your fuel consumption. So yeah, there's technologies there. I mean, again, we can't do this on our own. For hybrid technology to absolutely deliver something into the marketplace that's of real value, it also needs to be recognized as a zero emission fuel. So we need to be able to geofence with that as well. And then there's a continuation. At the moment, that's still seen as not a zero emission fuel. But if you're looking for purest efficiency, using an electric machine to peak shave where the high fuel consumption is, absolutely can contribute to that.
It's interesting, the hybrid question. I mean, we had hybrid test vehicles out as far back as 2008, I think it was, 2009, with various operations, both the two, well, the three actually, I think two were based in central London, one was in Cumbria, so they were on very, very types, different types of operation. And we decided way back then that that wasn't going to work for us, which is why we've not continued with the hybrid model. But I guess we all have different views, as we just talked about, V's or inlines. It's the same.
I think our first hybrid did 1.2 kilometres in pure electric mode.
Yeah, did it.
But to be fair to it, I mean, back then it offered a, I think, something like a 10% fuel saving if you used it right. I mean, it was very much about driver training, to be able to understand how to get the best out of that, because you could also swing the pendulum the other way. Yeah. And it could be a higher fuel consumption if you're constantly charging and using. So understanding regeneration and those kind of things is key. But the hybrid will die if it isn't recognised as a zero emission technology. Yeah. Otherwise, there's no real marketplace for it.
Absolutely.
There's another one there, if I can read it. It's a bit small. Is there too much emphasis on tailpipe emissions when comparing EV versus diesel, and more consideration be given to complete life cycle analysis CO2 reduction?
I think to a degree. The focus is how do we measure? And the focus at the moment is on tailpipe emissions, and there are different types of emissions, as I'm sure everybody knows. Particulates and NOx are very much the things that are, or that can contribute towards acid rain and health problems from a city perspective, which is why they see the significant input on the Euro legislation parts. CO2 emissions are slightly different. We know that CO2 is directly proportional to fuel consumed. I mean, that's a physics question. And now we have seen the legislation change the rhetoric more into considering CO2 and allowing us to grow within and improving fuel consumption. The challenge in the early Euro days was that there was a price to pay in fuel consumption to improve NOx and particulates. That seems to have leveled. The life cycle analysis, I think, is something that we need to get better at. You know, battery electric vehicles have a huge CO2 burden at the front end, and then that tails off very quickly, and it's about energy you can put through. Diesel or internal combustion is slightly different, but the life cycle analysis piece, which then also plays back to that conversation before about how do you consider an ecosystem? Where does your energy come from? What are you doing with carbon? Are you getting it from a renewable source? And then it becomes a whole concept. At the moment, legislation applies as a tank to wheel. We'll talk a lot about well to wheel, but at the moment, legislation is very much a tank to wheel. Life cycle analysis goes one step beyond that and considers how do you go about recycling and where does your energy come from right at the front end.
Yeah. Another one from the audience here. Why do you think Sweden has two of the world's most successful truck manufacturers? Good question.
It is a good question. We're both from Sweden, aren't we? So it's, I don't know is the simple answer. I mean, I think, as Phil mentioned earlier about the V8, I mean, I think we've both built up that following over a lot of years. I always find it very interesting when you go to Sweden. If you go to Gothenburg, all you ever see on the roads is Volvos. And if you go to Stockholm, all you see is Scania. So it's a very tribal thing, even within Sweden. We very, very see very rarely a lot of Scanias in on the west coast, and the opposite on the east coast. But I guess it's where we are. Well, we've both built that following up over the years, and the Swedes are very passionate about it from both brands as well. So it's interesting, and we do get some crossover. We get certain people go to work for Scania and vice versa. But the thing is, the Swedes are very, very passionate about all their brands. Obviously, there's other things outside of trucks, but
I think as well, it's a relatively small country. Sweden is. It's a very relatively small population density, which means as the industrial system grows, they've had to export, which means they've had to adapt. I think it's healthy that Scania and Volvo are both from Sweden, and probably that's helped push each other on quite a lot. But that is quite industrial in its approach and in its export culture, which means that they have had to be very keen to adapt and evolve into something. And that adaption and evolution is what generally drives progress, which probably puts us in a good place. But I'm not sure I could give any more of a compelling answer than that, to be honest.
Both good answers. So currently, as we all know, Scania is the king of the road in terms of horsepower, 770. Mm-hmm. How long are you going to let them win? Or is that it now?
I think the landscape has changed very much in recent years. I mean, obviously we had 750 for probably, I don't know, probably 10 years, there or thereabouts. And then obviously you've had 770 for 2 years. Two and a bit years, maybe. So
really,
we'll let's see. Time will tell, I'm sure. But obviously, we've got lots of engine developments with ICE engines that are still to be done. And Phil mentioned Euro 7, so let's see what the future holds.
But so you might still be in the race then.
Who knows? We'll have to see. I guess time will tell.
And what about electric? Who's got the most powerful electric truck?
I guess we have, because we've got the full range already, so I don't think I've seen one of your tractor units just yet, but...
Yeah. What'd you get up to?
Well, I mean, in terms of torque, I mean, you look at the torque levels of an FH16 or a V8, I mean, the FH16, 3,550, and I think you're at 3,700 newton metres. An equivalent electric truck is 2,400 newton metres, but it's constant torque all the time, so as soon as your foot hits the accelerator, you get the whole lot in one go. Our heavy-duty trucks have got three traction motors, 222 horsepower each. So in theory, you've got a 666 4x2 yeah. Tractor at sort of 40 tons. So power-to-weight ratio is far in excess of what you get with an equivalent diesel. But yeah, interesting times is where we're going. But let's see. But 2,400 newton meters, 666 horsepower, number of the devil. So that's where we are today.
So. One last question, unless there's any more from the audience, and it's a simple one, well, not a simple one, a quick one. How long has diesel got? What's your best estimate?
I think in a global manufacturing supply chain, there's life in the internal combustion engine, yeah? Whether it's always diesel or whether it's a synthetic alternative or HVO will depend. But, I mean, the UK has set its timeline and its agendas, but from a global manufacturing point of view, there's a evolution of infrastructure and everything else, and we build to a demand. We're reacting to what a customer demand is around efficiency and around how we can best deliver goods and products in the best way. So I'm not sure I see an end really to internal combustion in the timeline that the UK has set for the global population. So I think there's a good few years yet. Whether it runs entirely on diesel or whether synthetic alternatives and HVO and variations of that become relevant, or even hydrogen combustion. But the internal combustion engine on a global scale still has some work to do yet.
I'd agree.
Okay.
I can't really add any more to that. That's pretty much where we're on the same page with that.
Okay. Absolutely. Well, we've actually got another question just come in. Are we in danger of the EV boom? Are we in danger with the EV boom just handing our automotive industry to China on a plate?
No, I don't think so. I mean, we've already built our own battery plants. We've got one up and running in Belgium already, making our own batteries. We're just building a new one in Maristad, which is just north of Gothenburg. So we're very much doing it ourselves. We're not buying batteries from China and shipping them in. They're being built in house. So I don't think so. No.
We're following the same logic. We're assembling our own batteries. We are absolutely dedicated to being able to follow that supply chain. I think competition is healthy. It needs to be regulated in the right way. We all need to play on the same sort of level playing field, and we need to make sure that we do that. But I think disruptors, changes, I think it was said yesterday that disruptors fill a gap in the market. And if, as established manufacturers, we're leaving gaps in the market, then maybe those things shine a light on it, and maybe it's healthy competition. So I think we shouldn't be afraid to say, what are we doing? We shouldn't be afraid of competition coming into the market, but we also shouldn't be complacent, and we should be absolutely prepared to learn everything we can from them. But also we need to apply that same regulatory framework and keep the sustainable ethical agenda absolutely on the table as well.
Okay. Right, well, no more questions, that's it. So thank you both very much.
Cheers, Will.
Cheers. Thank you, John.